Just going to take a quick break from the show, everybody, to tell you a little bit more about one of my favorite things in the world, Audible. Audible lets you enjoy all of your audio entertainment in one app. You'll always find the best of what you love, or there's new stuff to discover all the time in Audible. Incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to new releases to celebrity memoirs, mysteries, and thrillers, motivation, wellness, business. They got it all here in Audible, and you can have it all too. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, including Small Town Murder, Crime and Sports, and Your Stupid Opinions, with highly anticipated new releases and next listen recommendations to habituate every type of thriller listener. And you can keep your heart rate up month after month with this pulse-pounding collection you can't hear anywhere else. The true crime stuff they have is amazing. Right now, what I'm listening to is The Family by Ed Sanders, and it is a full, complete retrospective on the Manson family, kind of all of what they were doing to set their weird stuff up. It is amazing and incredibly detailed. Great stuff, and there's so much more on there. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog, including bestsellers, new releases, latest stuff. You got it. It's all there. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/smalltownmurder or text smalltownmurder to 500-500. That's audible.com/smalltownmurder or text smalltownmurder to 500-500.
Now back to the show.
This episode is brought to you by Philo.
Oh, philo.tv.
That's right. There's nothing better than unwinding, watching a little TV. But it's a real hassle if with, you know, cable trying to flick through. Cut the cord. Get rid of that. You don't need any of that. Philo has all that you could need here. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month.
What?
Can't beat it. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, they have an unlimited DVR for 1 year, so you can save all your favorite shows.
Wow.
Watch them when you want to watch them. Yeah. That's fantastic. Never miss a minute of shows like Death by Fame, Married to Evil, or The Prison Confessions of Gypsy Rose Blanchard.
Oh.
Good stuff. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like ID, A&E, and Law and Crime, and many more. With Philo, you can start watching in seconds for less money and much less hassle. Really easy to use, really easy to sign up. Try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/smalltownmurder. That's philo.tv/smalltownmurder to get 50% off your first month.
Now back to the show.
Everybody, and welcome back to Small Town Murder Express.
Yay and choo-choo!
Ah, yay indeed, Jimmy, yay indeed. My name is James Petragallo. I'm here with my co-host.
I am Jimmy Wissman.
Thank you, folks, so much for joining us all aboard the murder train, pulling away from the station. We have got a crazy episode to get to today. Super crazy. Quickly, before we get to that, thank you for everything. Check out shutupandgivememurder.com. Get your tickets to the virtual live show October 27th. Spend Halloween with us. It'll be available for a week after that, so you can watch it whenever you want, as many times as you want.
Yeah.
Just like a live show, but right there in your living room. shutupandgivememurder.com is where you do that. Also, patreon.com/crimeandsports is where you get all the bonus episodes. You get everything. We've got a huge back catalog that you're going to get for $5 a month or more, whatever you want to put. That is, it's a cup of coffee.
A drink.
That's
yeah.
it. And that is get you the whole back catalog and two new episodes every other week. This week, the two episodes you're going to get for Crime and Sports, which you'll have access to, you'll get the story of the Danbury Trashers, which is a hockey team owned by a guy in the mafia. And it's a minor league team, and he got it for his son to mess around with. And it goes about as you would expect a guy in the mafia owning a minor league hockey team to go.
Yeah.
And then there's, of course, crime that gets involved, and it gets really wild and out of control.
I do love the cameos of Mayor Mark in there a lot.
Yeah, that's right, because it's Danbury.
Yeah.
And then for Small Town Murder, he's a fan of our show, in case you didn't know. That's why the mayor of Dan, ex-mayor of Danbury. Now, Small Town Murder, for this bonus, we're going to talk about, on that one, we're going to talk about the whole Haman Lee, Adnan Syed serial. We'll talk about the whole thing. I've spent countless, I've looked at everything there is to look at on this, documents, this, that. So I'm going to give you my opinion. Jimmy will give you your opinion. Yeah. We'll go over the whole thing, what happened, and everything like that. Patreon.com/crimeandsports is where you get all of that stuff right there. That said, I think it's time, Jimmy.
Yeah.
It's time to sit back. What do you say? We're gonna.
Oh, boy.
Let's clear the lungs, everyone, shall we? We'll sit back wherever you are, hopefully in a not very public place, just for your own, you know, legal safety. I'd like you to sit back and shout, shut up
and give me murder.
Let's do this, Jimmy. Let's go on a trip, why don't we?
Let's do it.
We are going all the way to Nevada today, which it has been a long time since we've been in Nevada. Yeah. We're going to Lemon Valley, Nevada.
Where the fuck is that?
Lemon with two M's, by the way.
Not how you spell it.
Like Jack Lemon, not like a lemon. This is in, it's northwestern Nevada. It's a suburb of Reno.
Really?
This if Reno 911 was real, Sheriff's Department, they would be coming out here for incidents.
Reno's got suburbs?
Yes. That's like where they would go when Jack Galifianakis was like, had his like a camouflage painted school bus with like a pregnant teenage wife and nine children running around.
And with a pool, like one of those little plastic pools on the
ground. That he's hiding things under. It's out in that section of Reno, in the dirt section, especially back when this happened, exactly, too. So it's, like I said, northwestern Nevada. It's about 15 minutes to Reno, just outside Reno. About 2.5 hours to Sacramento. That's actually the closest other city is that way. Wow. It's like 7 hours down to Vegas. And then 2 hours to Imlay, Nevada, which was the last Nevada episode, episode 216, March of 2021. It's been a while since we've been there.
It's
so
been a long while.
That was a crazy episode one, too. That was a guy who like was crazy and thought that there was like triangles in the desert. I remember that guy.
Of course.
He was nuts. Population of this town, 5,362. Median income and home price are like right at average. Median income is 54 grand a year for the household. Home price, 293 grand. So it's like average in every respect here. Quick history here. This is basically known as one of the largest trailer areas there is.
Really?
Outside of Reno, Sun Valley, Panther Valley, all these valleys outside of Reno are all Lemon Valley. They're all known for having massive trailer parks and massive amounts of trailers.
Really? Because
it was the way the sewage system was back in the day. Like, you weren't allowed to build things into this. So you it was a very odd rules that they had in this area caused everybody to have trailers here rather than...
I'd like to know what the rules were. Like, you can only have septic tanks, like you can only have one service. So they're like, we'll put 700 people on the service.
It was a really boring thing about septic systems and shit. So I was we don't have time for that. But it's what it was. It was something to do with septic systems, is where they needed trailers. So reviews of this town very quickly. 5 stars. Here's one. 5 stars. Quote, there is very little crime in this area. Maybe criminals don't want to travel that far to inflict crime. So it's more about you than the criminals. They're just like,
the criminals too far are just lazy
there.
Around here.
Yeah, you know. But the visibility of police is always present. A motorist can barely speed down Lemon Drive without being pulled over. 5 years ago.
Well, don't fucking speed,
Don't speed on the main road, probably, then. Every town has the road you can't speed on. You know,
Lemon
know
Valley,
that.
And the main drag is probably Lemon. Don't
Drive.
Speed there.
5 years ago, we had a miscreant break into cars and steal some things. A miscreant? We've never had that word in a review before. But that was the only thing that's happened. Well, except if a person leaves their bike outside. For some people, for some reason, people like to steal bikes, but that's about it. Yeah, people
that's
steal
everywhere.
Everything. Yeah, that's everywhere. If you leave a bike unlocked outside. The prevalence of crimes is very little, and the visibility of police is very concentrated on the main street. That's why you shouldn't speed there, dummy. In the neighborhood, people speed up to 40 miles an hour, and I wish the cops caught them more for that, but I know the police are busy too. My only concern would be to catch speeders in the neighborhood because kids are walking to school, and some of them are in first grade. Don't want to see them get run over. That's their whole review of the town. It's just about speeding and speed enforcement.
Yeah.
What the
some of them are in second grade too.
Is it a nice town, or what are we talking about? I heard nothing. Wow. 4 stars. My favorite part of Lemon Valley is that we are far enough from the casinos that we can see the stars at night. It's quiet and the people are friendly. That's nice. Very nice. 4 stars. There are plenty of there are plenty great on getting all the roads worked on, and if there is a fire, I can count on the fire department to be there. That's a plus.
Great.
That is, talk about as basic as you get. Like, if you call the fire department, they'll come. Terrific. Wow, that's good.
Let's show up.
Some of the police staffed generally care, but then a small portion is corrupt, only looking to fill their quotas. You are most likely to get pulled over and ticketed in Reno than in most cities. Okay, because it's all tourists from everywhere. Okay, 1 star. This is the person who hates it. Crime has been definitely brought up to Lemon Valley, considered much smaller than its counterparts in the new construction industries like DeMonte and Spanish Springs. Crime is higher than both of those areas combined. Houses are cheaper, but the problem is the area is very separated. In other words, there are a lot of free and open land between the buildings, making it look rural and suburban at the same time. Great. Good for you.
Goddamn government's important crime.
And then the last line is definitely lower income. So there you go. This is like Reno's trashy north side here.
I love it.
Things to do, Reno River Fest. Oh, buddy. Yeah. First of all, enter the Cornhole Championship there.
Mm-hmm.
They have the last 2 years' winners on there, the first, second, and third. 2 years ago, Beavis and Butthead came in first. And last year, the Dude Dads took the title. So,
yeah, of course there is.
That's nice. Just in case you're wondering if it's like crooked or if this is like a real... Like, if you can count on this shit.
Is this sanctioned?
The Northern Nevada Cornhole officials will be on site at the tournament. So this is all going in the books officially. This is no bullshit.
It's all regulation, yeah.
It's no backyard horse shit here.
They're measuring between the two boards.
And then while you're cornhole, and you're going to want to rock to some tunes, I guess.
Oh, you're damn right, yeah.
So they're going to kick it off here. The headliners for these nights are Lindsay L, E-L-L.
Oh.
I don't know. It's country shit, Jimmy. You're supposed to know this stuff.
Don't look at me.
And then Ryan Griffin. Not Brian Griffin, the dog from Family Guy. Ryan Griffin. Do you know who that is?
I'd rather have Brian.
Do you know who that is by any chance?
I don't.
I've heard him sing. He can croon. He's good. Also, they have, those are the headliners, mind you.
Wow.
Then they have Nevada 445. I assume that's their area code. Mark Mackey. He'll be there. Kaiser Soze will be there.
Oh,
that's a band.
Great.
And then Matt Rainey and the Dippin' Sauce.
Dippin', I hate all of them.
I-N. Yeah. This sounds like shit while people are cornholing. We don't need any of that. What we do need, though, is to talk about a murder. Let's just do that. Let's do that. Okay. This is, fuck, this is weird. Okay. Let's go back in time to 1974.
Oh.
Okay. Now think about this area in 1974.
Uh-huh.
The West was nothing like it is now. In 1974, Phoenix was like a little city nothing around it. You know what I mean?
It was so much desert.
It was so much desert. Reno was fucking nothing, and it was just concentrated in the city of Reno. So people who lived out here lived in trailers on sand dunes, essentially, is what it like. It's a bleak place back then. It's all it was trailers, too, and everything that happens here is in trailers. It's all trailer stuff, and this is a really kind of, you know, out there.
Not a lot of air conditioning. Like, I'm shocked that people survived.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
How fucking hot it is in the West. It's mind-bogglingly hot. Yeah.
Wrote people to come, too. You should come, too. Oh, okay,
come on,
we'll pack
here.
Right
I'm
up.
Well, writing fuck. This through the blisters on my lips.
Guy gets out there. He's like, he's doing his shirt. And he's like, gee, one thing you forgot. You know, you mentioned the jobs. You mentioned that was nice. And you mentioned the landscapes. And one thing you failed to mention, the fucking searing hellfire heat that this place generates. What the fuck are we doing here?
I blinked and I could feel how hot my eyelids are on the bottom eyelids.
We're all wearing black suits. What are we the hell is wrong with us?
You know when it's hot out and like you blink and like the sill of your eye hits the bottom one and you're like, oh my God, that's fire.
Oh my God. Well, this at this point too, there's a lot of horse people that live out here.
Okay.
There's such open land that there's horse people out here, people with a bunch of horses. And a lot of the people who live here aren't even like huge horse people, have horses to like ride around on, because that's just what people do out here because it's the Wild West.
Yeah.
Back then, Reno was known for had a few casinos and you could go there and get a divorce in 6 weeks. You could. That was the thing. In like the 1960s, it took forever to get a divorce. You, if you went to Reno and established residency for 6 weeks, you can get a divorce there. So people would move there for 6 weeks and then leave.
Married in Vegas, divorced in Reno.
That's it. That's how it works. Got a full system that shoots you out to Idaho when you're gone. So let's talk about a gentleman here. In 1974, he's 34 years old.
Yeah.
He is born in 1940. Edward Nevin Crockett. Nevin is N-E-V-O-N. Crockett with two T's. So Eddie Crockett here. Now, Eddie's a construction worker. Nice going here. He's a construction worker out there. They live out in Lemon Valley. He got married in July of 1973. Uh-huh. He marries a woman named Chiquilata is her name.
She sounds hot as fuck.
C-H-I-Q-U-L-A-T-A. Chiquilata.
You betcha. I love her.
Chiquilata Ann is her name. Chiquilata Ann Harrington at the time. She becomes Chiquilata Ann Crockett. Okay.
What the fuck? Where did they get Chiquilata?
Chiquilata Ann. I don't know.
Harrington.
Harrington might have been her former married name, though. Okay. I don't know what her maiden name is here. Now, these two get married. They live in a trailer home in Lemon Valley. Nowadays, this is a much more built-up area. But back then, there was nothing out here. It was just them in a fucking trailer.
Just a random trailer out in the middle of the desert.
Like, I looked up the address, and I'm like, oh, there's, like, stuff around there now. Like, it's nothing like they described this right around their trailer back then. So, Chiquilata here, she has... Chiquilata. Chiquilata sounds better for some reason. Chiquilata has brought
That's when you put tomato juice in your margarita.
Well, chickpeas and tomato juice. It's like a hummus tomato juice. You call it a Chiquilata. That's what it is.
Gross. Pour your thick hummus in your tomato juice.
You gotta whip it up real good, otherwise
really chew your drink.
It doesn't really dissolve so much, but it's pretty good. It's nutritious. Now, Chiquilata has with her also her six children.
Oh my God.
Six children. There's a little girl, four little boys, and a 15 and a half year old daughter. That's who she has. In a trailer. So we're talking eight people in a trailer. Okay. And they have like horses and shit too. It's weird. They own horses and all this stuff. The daughter's name, the 15-year-old's name, is Blythe Harrington, which sounds like the bad guy in an 80s movie. That sounds like he's Blythe Harrington. That sounds like he's got like a sweater tied around his neck, and he's got like blonde feathered hair, and he's making fun of Michael J. Fox for not getting pussy or something. Anything. Blythe Harrington sounds like a swashbuckler.
Dread pirate Blythe Harrington.
It does. Or like an English author. Blythe Harrington. He wrote that whole series of books on Jack the Ripper. Remember him? Either way, Blythe Harrington, 15-year-old girl. Actually, she's just a nice girl. She's not an 80s bad guy movie. She's just a nice teenage girl. Okay?
With an unfortunately named...
Yeah.
It's just a difficult thing to do.
Named in the 80s, it would have been tough. So July 2nd, 1974. So basically 4th of July weekend here. Blythe takes off at about 5:15 p.m. She takes off on her horse to ride. She's riding toward Antelope Valley. Okay, on her horse here. It's a path where she rides all the time. Her and the stepfather, Edward, here ride all the time. He's an avid rider, too. They go out on rides through here all the time. So to see her trotting out this way, extremely normal. Like, that's
very
just
common.
What she does. So a little before 5 p.m., Edward returned home from his construction job. And everybody said he saddled up his horse when he got home, like right away, didn't like change clothes or anything, saddled up his horse and went on the same path. Okay. In the end, we'll find out that he traveled approximately 19 miles.
Jesus.
That horse got to be worn out, I guess. I don't know. How much stamina does a horse have? So, yeah.
I rode out of the Grand Canyon 13 fucking miles on one of those. They let that horse stay the night at the top before they take him back to the corrals down.
Makes sense.
And if he walks in, then he's not allowed to hike anybody back out.
What is he, a truck driver? That's good, though.
Yeah,
don't break the horn. Yeah, don't break. That's what I meant. Is there like, is he on speed? Check him for speed. No, they shouldn't fucking torment these horses.
But, that's what, like, 19 miles is a long fucking ride.
That's long. So, anyway, they're doing this. Now, sometime between 11 and 11:30 p.m., they realize that where's Blythe? She's not home.
Yeah.
And so Chickalotta and Edward are sitting there going, well, where the fuck is Blythe? Kids are bouncing off the walls of a trailer. You just hear sounds of tin all the time, things hitting tin. So between 11 and 11:30, he ends up, because some time goes by, and we'll find out what he did in the meantime and what Chickalotta did. But Edward calls the Washoe County Sheriff's Department to report what he found up on Antelope Mountain.
Oh, no.
He went up on Antelope Mountain, and he said he found his stepdaughter's nude body up there.
Oh, no.
Yeah. He went up there. He said him and Chickalotta found her. They found her. They said it was in a remote area near a little-used dirt road that you wouldn't know is there unless you were a local, basically. Yeah. So one of the horse she rode out on, was found tied to a tree nearby. Just standing there, you know, fine, alive and healthy, in better shape than poor Blythe. You know what I mean? Poor Blythe is dead here. So Crockett said after a while he searched for her on horseback and couldn't find her on horseback. So he returned later with his truck because the horse got tired or whatever. So he had to come back with the truck. And he said once he went around with the truck, him and his wife were looking for the girl. And that's when they found this area up here and they found her up there. Now, what happens is the cops they just cordon off the area around here. They do like a 15-foot radius around the body, which, by the way, is not a big enough crime scene.
You need
100-yard
radius.
You need a lot for footsteps, for things, for that, tracks of any kind.
Right.
15 feet, that means anybody can walk and kick dirt and do anything they want outside of 15 feet.
Yeah.
If someone is shot, a shell casing could be way more than 15 feet.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's you got to fucking really have a bigger crime scene than that. But it's 1974 in the middle of the desert somewhere. So they're just like, that should be good. Right. All right. Just keep the wolves away from her.
Somebody rips a shoe off her and throws it. They'll throw it further than 15 feet.
Absolutely. But they go, that should be good. Well, they just do that and they wait for daylight to arrive. They don't have any lights or anything they could bring out here for a dead teenage girl. Fire up the 1K and let's get out there. Nope.
Leave her on the ground.
They left her on the ground.
Oh, Jesus.
And stood there over a nude, dead teenage girl on the ground for.
Waiting for sunup.
For what, 5-6 hours?
Is that
July? So 5 hours, July, and it's 5 a.m. Sun comes up in the summer in the West. Yeah.
So hot.
That's disgusting. That is just gross. And it's even hot at night. Not out here, though, because it's a desert. So. It's not that hot. So either way, once daylight comes, several additional officers arrive, and that's when they begin gathering evidence and doing photographs and all that. Meanwhile, it's been sitting out in the dryness and in the elements. You could be losing physical evidence. There's a lot of things going on here. The pathologist arrived around 10:30 a.m. So
can't be bothered at 7 a.m.
Yeah. Body's been there maybe 12 hours at this point. Right. We don't know because it was found at about 11. The autopsy performed found body tissue, fluid, hair, foreign material samples, and all that shit that we'll get to. That's what they did for that. They found out that she was shot 3 times in the back with a .22.
Good Lord, man.
That's what they figure out. It's a .22 pistol, they figure, is what they're thinking about here. Now, they're asking about that, and they ask Edward. Well, because they have to ask the family, what kind of guns do you have?
Right.
And he said, well, I got a .22 that I carry around with me all the time when I'm out there. Uh-huh. And they said, well, we'd like to take a look at your gun, make sure it hasn't been shot. And he said, well, while I was riding around to look for her, I shot at some beer cans as I was riding my horse. So I have shot it tonight. I bucked a few shots off at beer cans out there, you know, because when I'm looking for my missing stepdaughter, I go, you know what? Let's do some boot scooting, target shooting right now and just pop at some beer can. Somebody done left their Miller Lite. I think I'm going to shoot it now. Find your stepdaughter.
Why would he do that?
What the fuck, man? So he's like, yeah, just carry that around. So I bucked a few shots off. Who knows? I'm a cowboy. What do you want from me?
How many did you shoot, sir? Because if it's three,
yeah.
We're going to have a talk.
Where are the fucking casings? So Several days later, the sheriff's department gets a warrant to search their whole residence. They're looking for that made them suspicious. I have a 22. I was shooting it around there. So like, yeah, we want to look. But they're also saying we just have to look through all her stuff and make sure that, you know, whatever. You never know. So they look through them. They're looking for certain guns, ammunition, clothing that might match fibers, things like that. So during the search, there's a small box on top of a closet shelf, and they knocked it over off the shelf by accident. Yeah. They were sweeping the shelf, and it got hit and knocked down. Uh-huh. Out of this tiny box in the closet, it's a bunch of just bits of torn paper, like if you tore up a note into little pieces and then put it in a little box for later, okay? Sure. Torn pieces. Edward says, you don't even bother picking them up. I don't care. Was it scraps of paper? He goes, I'll vacuum it later, so don't even worry about picking them up, because they started picking them up. He goes, don't worry about it. One of the cops, as he's picking up the scraps of paper, sees just where, and it's a little scrap of paper, but they see the sole word written on this scrap of paper is the word love.
Uh-oh.
And it looks like it's written in like a younger female's handwriting.
Uh-huh.
So he says, let the other cops go, we're taking the scraps too. So they take all the scraps. They don't know what it means, but just in case they take, maybe this will be about a boyfriend that fucking she could be meeting up with somewhere.
She tore it up and she's mad at him and he's got reason to be mad at her.
Who knows? That's what I mean. So you never know. They need they just have a dead girl in a fucking on a mountain. So one of the officer puts the paper bits into his pocket, which is not, I don't think, proper evidence procedure.
I think that's protocol.
I mean, what do I got? I'll just put them in my pocket there for later. I don't mix it up with my cigarettes and
here we are at the crime scene. Everybody fill your pockets. We'll empty them at the station.
Everybody wear cargo pants? Good. Good. We're going to fill our pockets with what we got here. We'll come back for the rest. Fill them pockets up. What is happening?
Fill them to the brim. We'll meet at the station and rendezvous and really put it together.
We'll dump it all out on one table and see what we got ahead of us, man. We'll have to
divvy it up together.
So Edward, says when he walks in there, just check on what's going on. He said, what happened to all those scraps that were on the floor? They said you didn't have to pick them up. And they said, well, we're taking them with us.
Yeah.
And he said, no, you're not. You're not taking those paper scraps that you found on the floor. You're not taking my garbage.
Yeah, we are.
And they're like, well, no, they have a warrant specifically to look for guns and shit, and this got knocked out of a smaller container that couldn't fit the things they're looking for. When you're looking for large items, that's why police will try to be vague as they can be when they get a search warrant, because that way they can find other shit. But when it's something like this that's not what they were looking for and not in plain sight because they had to knock the box off to get it to open, now you're in another area. So they said, fine, we can get an additional warrant. I mean, obviously, we'll get one, and that's fine. So he said, okay, fine. I'll sign off. Crockett said, I'll sign off on you taking it, only if you tell me what it says later. Tell me what's in there.
What the fuck?
That's the deal. You have to inform me of the contents of that shit later on, okay?
What a bizarre request. Okay.
And they go, great. Sounds good. No problem. High five. Sure. Fuck off. Yeah. All right, good. So
go team. See you around.
All right. So they get all their empty their pockets when they get back to the station. They pile everything up, and they're like, wow, look at what you found. I found this. Yeah. It's like Halloween. You got full-size Snickers? Oh, man.
What is that, a cock ring? Oh, that was just mine. That wasn't there.
Sorry, hold on. That wasn't for this is for later. This isn't for the part of the investigation. When they put all the imagine being the guys who have to assemble the paper scraps.
Oh, Jesus.
They assemble the paper scraps. Okay, after painstaking, it's a lot of paper scraps, apparently, so it's hard to assemble. It appears to be a diary written by Blythe Harrington, basically exclusively detailing the ongoing love affair, including detailed sexual relations with her stepfather.
God damn it!
Why? Why? Why are we what are we doing? No. So at that point, they're like, hey, Eddie, we'd like to have a chit chat with you now.
Remember when you said you wanted to know what the letter is? Come on in.
Think you knew what the letter was. So he says, yeah, I had sex with her. I fucked her. That's what he says. He says, I fucked her. And they're like, Well, yeah, we know that. We found the whole diary. It's pretty.
She said so.
She's either has an amazing imagination or and could have been like the foremost, you know, porn writer of the 1970s, or you're disgusting and I'd like to crack you with my nightstick in the skull.
Yeah. Or you've raped a child, sir.
He said, but he didn't kill her, obviously. Okay. What the fuck kind of statement is that, by the way? I fucked the child, but I didn't kill her. The only thing worse would be I fucked her, then I killed her. Or worse than that, I killed her, then I fucked. That's the worst one of all, probably. Either way, this is bad. This isn't good. Yeah,
that's a horrible person.
It's not a good, and it's just a terrible criminal thing. Like, it's crazy. In the diary, too, it said she had said in the diary that she has loved him for 7 years.
Oh, God, she was 8.
This is not, we don't know if the sexual molestation started at 8, but something.
Certainly the brainwashing grooming started when she was 8.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. She says she's loved him since she was 8, so he was probably doing something fucking weird. I don't know what's going on. So that's crazy shit. So now they need evidence besides that he was banging a stepdaughter, because that's a charge, but that's not murder, and she's dead. So we need to talk about this. Now, doesn't look good for him right now. No, he came home, got on his thing, followed her. Bad. So that looks like also that they might have had a fight. He found the diary, tore up the paper, and kept it. You know what I'm saying? That's what it sounds like, so no one would find it. So now what they know is that it's undisputed that both Edward and Blythe rode north on Lemon Valley Road, which is now a place where you get speeding tickets.
Evidently, yeah.
Back then, it was a place.
Ride a horse.
It was a dirt road you rode your horse on back then. So that tells you how different shit is now. It's not the main drag.
50 years ago, you used to could ride a horse down here.
Used to could ride it. This is down the road to the second windmill. That's just, you go down this far, that's called the second windmill. I guess there's two windmills.
There's the first one, then a second one.
Approximately 9.4 miles from this person's, from a residence here. Okay, this is a witness that they find. All right, this Mrs. Campbell is her name. Yeah. Okay. Now, the officers, though, who tracked the horse prints to that point didn't determine whether the two horses were riding together or at different paces or from different times. They don't fucking know. Who knows? So the distinctive track of Blythe's horse, though, clearly left the road at one point, and horse tracks as well as two sets of footprints continued from that point to the sagebrush toward the scene of her death. Because it's like they found her like lying in some sagebrush. Okay,
pushed her off the road, pushed her off the horse. Walk it.
It's what it is. So they said, though, they couldn't figure out who had horses and who didn't. It's the only fucking thing here. They also, by the time there's a trial, the officers had, quote, lost the photographs taken of the trail of prints.
What the fuck, man?
So, yeah. They did say, though, they knew at the time in the notes that one set of the footprints was made by Blythe. They figured that out, made by her shoe. It was specific. The other set has what they're calling chevron prints.
Yeah.
Okay, on it. That, they said, was probably the killer's because it was the person walking with her. Three sets of prints were found within the roped-off area around the body. The Blythe's prints, the chevron pattern print, and a single smooth-soled boot print. One boot print, which would the person fucking come down on a guy, honestly, did they come down on a jetpack, touch down with one foot, and push back up again? Like, that's impossible.
Yeah.
Either you fucked up the footprints, or those are it's from another time, or you're out of your mind. So either way, that's what they found. This show, Small Town Murder, is sponsored by BetterHelp.
BetterHelp.com.
Absolutely. And maybe your social battery. Where are you monitoring that right now? You drained down? Too much socializing from holidays? Not enough? Maybe some people hole up in the winter?
Sure.
And therapy is the thing. Therapy can help give you some self-awareness so you can build a social life that's not going to drain you or leave you wanting more here. So we totally are 100% advocates of therapy here. It's great for you. There's a million things it can help you with, and this is one of them, because social stuff is something that we all, it's really hard not to struggle with nowadays, especially even social media mixed in the mix. It's difficult. It really is.
Overwhelming.
Therapy can help. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
Yeah.
We very much recommend it. Entirely online, designed to be convenient and flexible. It's suited to your schedule. Mm-hmm. You fill out this brief questionnaire. They very quickly match you with a licensed therapist. And no additional charge. You can switch therapists at any time. Which is a big deal, because that's sometimes you're not vibing with somebody and you need to vibe with somebody. No additional charge for that at all. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/smalltownmurder today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/smalltownmurder.
And now back to the show.
Hey, everybody, just going to take a quick break from the show to tell you a little bit about the safest sponsor that's ever been, Simply Safe.
Oh, SimplySafe.com. SimpliSafe.com.
Springtime's coming here. So you got the spring, you got fresh air, fresh starts, and you clean your house. That's all fresh. It's also the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security. Make sure your newly cleaned, nice house is secure. That's important.
Well protected, yeah.
It's the only security system that Jimmy and I will use, and we recommend it highly. Sure. We both have it on not only our studios, our houses, anything we have that needs protection. Simply Safe is the way to go. It's so easy to install that even we can do it. You guys will love it because you'll feel secure. You will not be small town murdered in your own home, is what it is, if you have Simply Safe, because they're going to protect you. They're trusted by experts. It was named the best home security systems for 2024 by U.S. News and World Report, and Newsweek awarded Simply Safe the best customer service in home security. Simply Safe has given us and our many listeners real peace of mind, and I want you to have it too. We want you to feel good. Get 20% off any new Simply Safe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplysafe.com/small. That's SimplySafe, SimpliSafe.com/small. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
Now back to the show.
The state is going to say that the smooth-soled print was made by Edward Crockett when he discovered the body. And so there you go. Now, Crockett's team is going to say that print was probably made by whoever else was participating. It looks like two guys were participating in a killing. So it was probably one of them, right? Seems like two men's shoes here. So they made a cast of the smooth-soled print, and that print was larger than Crockett's boot size. Okay. So not his size and nothing he has.
Or a cop.
Or maybe a cop. But they also contended that the problems with the casting process or even the killer wearing an extra pair of socks might explain the disparity. They said maybe he got bigger boots and just wore more socks, which is you're really stretching that. You're like, you know, so no prints from the trail made by Crockett when he found the body had been preserved for comparison, because they wrecked all that shit. And they went, crime scenes, 15 feet, no more. Listen, we got a limited amount of that yellow tape. Now, I'm just going to say it. We don't have hundreds of feet to be running it all everywhere. Pick the tightest crime scene you can, and I'll just run a little circle around it with this shit. What the fuck?
Circumference, please.
That's all there is to it. Another area of dispute and confusion here is the sorrel-colored hairs discovered on the tree to which the officers found the Blythe's darker horse tied. So there was different horse hair there. The defense will say that the sorrel hairs, and that's Crockett's horse is a sorrel, by the way, came from the saddle blanket on Blythe's horse. And the blanket contained a bunch of sorrel hairs because the horses interact and mingle with each other all the time. So,
saddle probably is intermingled between other different horses, right?
There you go. That's exactly what it is. And this, at least the blanket, especially. Mm-hmm. So, as to where on the tree the hairs were discovered, the side on which the victim's horse stood or the other side, they didn't know. Because they don't have pictures. They lost these pictures. So they don't know whether the hairs were on the other side of the horse or on the side of the horse where they were on.
Okay.
So could this have been a horse that was tied up on the other side? What's going on? So it's a fucking mess. Experts will testify later that the murder weapon was a .22 Marlin rifle. Crockett was seen both embarking and returning from his ride in Lemon Valley. Each time they saw him carrying a .22 pistol, but no one saw him carrying a rifle. But he did own a .22 rifle.
Okay.
Now, Also, Crockett's stepsons testify later that they remember having his Marlin rifle. They had his Marlin rifle that afternoon. They were out using it. So they said he didn't have it. We had it. So, okay. Now, science comes in, okay, for this whole thing. There is testimony with expert testimony regarding examinations of pubic hair combings that was highly controversial. I just said that way too excited. Pubic hair. Yeah. That was a lot. It was the most excitedly ever anyone's ever been about that. The Washoe County Sheriff's criminologist found no foreign hairs there, okay? Mm-hmm. But they brought in other experts to check their work because, I don't know, I just feel like in Reno, remember Reno 911? It was like Brian Posehn and he was stoned. So let's get someone else in here.
Also, some people have lost some photos.
Yeah.
People have evidence in pockets.
Yes.
Let's just have somebody else, please.
And they don't handle a ton of murders. But right. You know who does handle a ton of murders?
Vegas?
The Oakland Police Department does.
Yeah, they do.
So they brought in an expert from the Oakland Forensics Unit. Okay.
Yeah, Oakland, Nevada.
Yes, obviously. Yeah. It's Oakland, Florida, that is. He discovered, or she discovered, I'm not sure, a hair foreign to both Blythe and Crockett in her pubic hair.
Oh.
Blythe's pubic hair. So, an expert from the California Department of Justice found two more foreign hairs that didn't match either of them.
Oh, my God.
So, we have a grand total of three hairs being found by three experts. They find an average of one hair apiece.
It's incredible luck.
So the state says these foreign hairs were not definitively established to be pubic hairs. They just say body hairs. Uh-huh. And they speculated they might have been the result of contamination occurring during the initial examination by the criminologist. Now, that's the other thing. Sometimes, and this happens a lot, you'll get fibers and hairs on bodies later on, especially back then when there was less rigorous. Now they keep physical evidence way better than they used to. But sometimes you will get hairs and things in the bags that they can't get out that will stick in there. Static electricity, things like that. So they can't get. So sometimes you don't get all the hair and something. So that'll be on there. So they're saying that must be what it is. Okay. They say the processing of the other evidence concerning recent sexual relations was even worse. Microscopic examination of a sample of the vaginal swab from Blythe's body revealed the presence of sperm.
Uh-oh.
Okay. They said absence of acid phosphates on a tampon found near the body created the inference that the sexual intercourse occurred on the scene. So it looks like Tucker tampon. It's I'm going to say, you know what we're saying.
Yeah,
so,
got it. God damn it.
Oh, God, Jesus Christ. So they said that indicated whoever had sex with her was probably the killer because she's dead where you had sex. So they probably didn't get up, walk away, say, wow, that was wonderful, walk away, and then another person comes up and murders her. That's probably unlikely is what they're saying. So they said the area around the body also showed no signs of a struggle whatsoever.
That's not good.
That's interesting. Now, they confirm that the Oakland Forensic Unit did identify the one hair as a pubic hair, but then the other, the California one, defined it as a body hair, not specifically that it could be a pubic hair, but maybe not. This is also from the court document here. Quote, credibility of the Washoe County Sheriff criminologist was severely impeached. His method of handling the evidence in this case was said by the prosecutor himself to be the worst he'd ever seen. You know who the prosecutor is, by the way?
No, who?
Mills Lane.
Is that right?
Yeah, the boxing referee, if you've ever seen
the
tiny, bald,
respected
talks
people
like this.
On earth. Yeah.
Judge Mills Lane, he had a fucking show. He had that show because he was the Washoe County prosecutor back then.
Yeah.
So he was like the top prosecutor.
The most respected people ever. He's fantastic.
They say also, with respect to the pubic hair combings in particular, the criminologist testified there were three totally disparate estimates of the number of hairs originally contained in the sample.
Uh-huh.
This is a fucking mess is what this is.
It sure is.
This is a bunch of dipshits didn't know how to process a fucking crime scene is what
it
sounds like. They decide to arrest him.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So they do this. This is after a 6-week investigation. He's indicted and he said, I'll give myself up if you indict me. He goes, I'm not going to come in unless you indict me, because that's when you can arrest me. So they indict him, and then he voluntarily comes to the sheriff's office, and he's jailed in lieu of $75,000 bail.
Okay.
Now, the next day, though, his bail is lowered. It's been $75,000. They lower it to $10,000.
That is really low.
Yeah. He says so he can help his defense and all that sort of shit. So it's reduced to $10,000, which is fucking interesting. So there he is. Came in on his own. He surrendered voluntarily. Yeah. He's not a flight risk, they're saying. And this is a thing that people don't understand about bail is whether you think this is right or wrong. The reason why there's bail in the law is to make sure you come back to court. Yeah. And the reason why criminals, no matter how bad their crime, sometimes get bail is because they have a history of showing up in court. Mm-hmm. So you'll get mob guys who've killed shitloads of people and done all this terrible shit racketeering. They'll keep getting bail because they always come to court.
Right.
So that's what it is.
And, there's a presumption of innocence. So
it's
should be able to get out.
People look at bail like it's like a pre-punishment. Like you need to raise that because we're scared you did the crime. But that would then you're not proven innocent.
So a presumption of innocence. That's
exactly.
A presumption of guilt.
So in order to have the presumption of innocence that's in the Constitution, you have to have that. So that's legally why that is anyway. So her, by the way, the five other kids who are still alive, they all get taken away by the father.
Yeah.
The father immediately goes to court once they hear that Edward Crockett admitted fucking molesting his daughter.
Right.
And says, give me those fucking kids back here. Yeah. And they have a court custody battle, and he gets the rest. He gets to have the kids all back.
Sure.
By the way, the Crocketts, they're still together while he's out on bail.
Unbelievable.
He's literally under indictment for killing her daughter, and he's admitted to definitely raping her daughter, and she's like, that's fine, take all my kids away, I'm staying with him.
She traded six kids for him.
Holy balls. So that's fucking insane. They moved to a different place here in Sparks, Nevada for a minute here.
Over there to
the
Sparks,
attorney,
huh?
Over to Sparks. An attorney, Joseph K. Jr., whose wife is one of the three administrators for a reward fund for information leading to the conviction, says that he does not represent Crockett because people said he represented Crockett for some reason. So he's like, I'd like everyone to know, not me. So anyway, they make statements. They get statements from everybody. All the kids say, two of the boys say they had the Marlin rifle that day, so he couldn't have had it. Other kids said they saw the rifle in the house that day. So he couldn't have had it. So we don't know which is which. So while awaiting trial in September of 74, they get robbed. They get burglarized.
Oh, no.
The Crocketts here. Vivian Rubin, who's assisting, she's one of the defense attorneys, said the burglary was committed at her residence where Crockett and his wife they're living at their attorney's house. That's where they're living. She can't work now. Where's he going to go? Who's going to hire this guy? She said that someone forced in the front door of her house and took $25 to $30 of hers in rolled pennies.
That's a lot of pennies.
And they took $80 in change that the Crocketts had.
Okay.
How much? What do they just have, a change table? Everybody put your change here, and there's two separate
That's
jugs.
A lot of change.
They have a lot of change in this house, man. So the trial gets delayed and delayed and delayed because one of his attorneys has another trial for some bank robber who stole $1 million from a bank. So they got to do that first. So the trial doesn't come till 19...
A couple of high-profile cases with this guy.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
1976 is when all this starts coming around, finally, the trial. They have motions to suppress evidence, obviously, filed here. They seek to bar the box and the scraps of paper in the diary, number one.
Yeah, because that's damning to the case.
Without that, there is no case, essentially. Right. Without that, he found his stepdaughter, and they go, well, he must have killed her. Case closed. There's no proof or no motive or no anything. He says the box was illegally seized by the sheriffs after they went through the trailer. Other evidence, though, they want suppressed include statements made by Crockett. You know, like, yes, I molested my stepdaughter. They'd like to get that.
That part's no good for me.
We'd like to winnow that out of the presentation here. So all of that shit. And they deny this motion here, and they even appeal that decision, and they say still they're going to let all that shit in. And so there you go. Now, there's a woman named June Campbell. That's Mrs. Campbell, who saw what we said. She's a witness here. Mm-hmm. She said during the grand jury testimony She said about 5:15, she saw from her house a girl very much resembling Blythe Harrington riding a dark horse very slowly northbound on Lemon Valley Road.
Yeah.
Okay. Because the time of death can't be accurately estimated medically, partially due to investigatory fuck-ups, by the way, because fucked that up bad. And because Crockett has an alibi until at least 4:30 p.m. on the day of the killing, the testimony was crucial because it indicates that Blythe is still alive at 5:15. So it's establishing a timeline. Prior to the trial, the defense located this girl, located a young girl bearing a striking resemblance to Blythe Harrington, who initially stated on the day in question she had been riding a dark horse in the Lemon Valley area around Mrs. Campbell's home. Because the girl's statement cast doubt on Mrs. Campbell's statement of the ID of Blythe Harrington, the prosecutor stipulated to dismiss the indictment at that point. However, because they said, well, this is, we don't have much of a case.
Yeah.
We don't have a timeline of where she was at that point if it wasn't her. So they said, we'd like to dismiss the indictment. The judge said, no, you can't dismiss the indictment. You have to go forward with the case.
Wow.
So they went, fuck, all right, well, I guess we're going forward with this case. So they have to, even though they don't really have any evidence. Then the girl changes her story.
Uh-huh.
Okay, she stated that she had not been, the girl who was riding and said, you know, whatever. Yeah. She said she'd not been riding in Lemon Valley that day, but had been riding in Sun Valley on a light-colored horse. Different valley, different horse.
Oh, boy.
Not my valley, not my horse is the thing there. Still later, this girl said that Washoe County's deputies had intimidated, threatened, and harassed her to change her story.
Right.
She says all of this. She petitioned the court to protect her from, quote, Hitler-like tactics, she said in court documents. She said the sheriffs used to coerce her into signing her second statement. It was
they put
that
me on a train.
They put me on. Yeah, that was the thing. So, yeah, to say that was it. So, she brought a motion for a protective order against the police, asserting that because of emotional instability suffered as a result of the prosecution's investigation, she could no longer separate fact from fiction regarding her activities on the day in question.
Okay.
Now, she made another statement, though. In her last statement, she told them that it was actually Sun Valley where she rode the day Blythe Harrington died. She said that the friend Sheila was a fictitious name she made up to cover the name of her boss, the real owner of the horse she rode, because she's having like an affair with her boss.
Oh my! Why is every young girl in this town fucking men?
I don't know. I don't know how old this girl is. She might be 20. We don't know. But they keep calling her a girl, so that makes me think.
I don't like
they
that
call
at
the
all.
Women women, and they call her a girl. So I don't like that at all. So she was a whole. This is insane. So. The attorney who argued for her request of protection said that she, what the fuck, basically, this girl changes her story all the time. He said, but she told me on the way to Mills Lane's office what she later told Lane and convinced me that she was feeling greatly relieved at finally telling the truth. He said the girl claimed to have been confused all along about the difference between Sun Valley and Lemon Valley, but she says she knows the difference now, and she's never sure that she rode in Lemon Valley. Lane said the girl claimed she originally thought it was Sun Valley, but after meeting with the defense, they both claimed that she originally thought it was the thing they're saying, but then after meeting with the other side, now it's not. Now, the thing is, the girl, there's one thing that she remembers specifically, she said, in Lemon Valley. She said while she's driving, they took her around to drive around to see which one looked familiar. She said that she couldn't remember anything about the area, but she remembered Mrs. Campbell's house as they drove past, but didn't know why she recognized it. She also informed the officers that she discarded a Coke can, a soda can, at a cattle crossing. She had just thrown it on the ground.
Yeah.
So the officers find a Coke can by the prescribed cattle crossing on Lemon Valley Road.
Uh-oh.
So that means she was there, and that fucks up the whole timeline.
Everything, yeah.
Yes. So here is Mills Lane versus Horse Girl, okay? That's what I like to call this. So Mills Lane talks like this. Okay, we're going to do this, all right? All right. Him
have a clean
with,
fight right here.
Right here, yeah. So, all right. Lane, at the hearing, established that the girl's first statement was tailored to suit the defense on the question of what color horse she rode about at about the murder day. Then he then went after the validity of her second statement. He said, in this statement, you signed for the sheriff's the truth as you recollect it. He asked her, and she said, no. She yelled at her and repeated the same thing. She said, no, I only did it to blah, blah, blah. So she refused his demands that she single out what part of the second statement are untrue. She said, a lot of things in there are untrue, but I don't want to get people involved who are getting involved.
What namely, my boss.
Fuck, exactly. Mainly a person who could go to jail for what I'm fucking going to tell you here. So Mills Lane says, you mean you'd lie to officers to get out of an investigation? And she said, you betcha.
Shit, yeah, sir.
Oh, my God. Asked later by her own attorney about the fact that the sheriff's tape recorder caught her laughing while supposedly being coerced, the girl looked at the judge and said apologetically, if I may, she said. She looked at the judge and looked back to Mills Lane and says, quote, I was kissing their asses. I was playing the game. I knew if I didn't go along with what they wanted, they'd keep me there all night. Yeah, she's I just want to watch WrestleMania.
Yeah.
She repeated under oath that her earlier claim that one detective, Sergeant Dan Coppa, her former junior high school government teacher, by the way, that's how small this town is, said twice, baby, you had to go and open your big mouth.
Oh, God.
So, yeah. Lane put Detective Commander Lorne Butner on the stand, or Butner. We'll call him Butner because these people fucked everything up. They put it on the stand to deny the girl's accusations of harassment. He categorically denied each part of her claims. He said they only contacted her three times and stopped when they said to stop. That was it. So he's like, that's bullshit. He said, I told her the next thing we'd like to do is go down to the station and get a statement, and I heard no objection to that. So he said, in the room, the door was wide open. It wasn't a big deal. So it wasn't like we were put her in a room and beat her with hoses and put a bright light on her. Now, here at trial, they go to trial with this.
Oh,
the prosecutor, here's the evidence that's going to be presented that the prosecution knows, but the defense doesn't know. Okay? And will not be presented by the prosecution in court. Yeah. Yeah, that's a Brady violation.
What the fuck are we doing?
Okay. Nice job, Mills. So, let's see here. What they found is, later on, through investigators, the day of the murder, the next day, the morning when they fanned out through the area to look all around, because they looked everywhere. They took horses and went all up and down the hillsides and the sagebrushes looking for evidence and shit. What they found was a lonely cabin out in that direction, pretty near where the murder site was. Okay? At that cabin, sheriff's deputies found two men who had been there for a few days at this location by the murder. This cabin... The walls of the cabin were marked with crude drawings, one of which, a large drawing on the wall, was of a naked girl with gunshot wounds in the same area as Blythe Harrington's body had gunshot wounds on it.
A cave painting, their fucking cabin?
Yep. In addition to that, they found a target area made out of electrical tape in the form of a female form with tits and curves and shit.
Yeah.
Yes, they found that there. Oh, my God. Now, this was at the back slope of Granite Peak, about 4 miles north of where the body was found. This the thing is, they also found that the sheriffs found the two men driving a Mustang at the cabins. I don't know if they mean a car or a fucking horse at this point. That's the great. I don't know if they mean an actual Mustang or a Ford.
Two men on a Mustang.
I don't know. I was there at the time of the murder. And anyway, the prosecutors have known about the cabin, but say there's no way to be sure the person who drew the figure also put the shots into the coincidental areas. You don't know if someone came and did that. The existence of the cabin became known when the owners called the media to say that sheriffs had been out there tearing the fucking cabins down a week after they talked to a witness and found the cabin with the guys in it. The sheriffs came out and tore the cabins down.
What the fuck is happening here?
Yes. They said the human target mentioned by this could have obviously been exculpatory evidence. It's fucking ridiculous is what it is. That's crazy. Oh, my God. They said that Mills Lane said, well, I mean, it wasn't right next to the body. That's later his excuse.
It was close by. Yeah.
A report by the defense expert later on finds a ballistics test conducted by Washoe County Sheriff's investigators, so this is discoverable evidence that you're supposed to give, cannot be viewed as indicating Crockett's rifle killed the girl. Okay. His fucking ballistics on his rifle came up that it's not his rifle that killed the girl. Testimony by this same expert that the footprints, which accompanied the girl's path from Antelope Valley to the scene of her death, also cannot be Crockett's. Sources say the defense expert will contradict sheriff reports claiming that the sole pattern wears indicate that it was his footprint. Now, what of these shoes? Evidence of distinctly Nevada shoe factory footprints. Apparently they make a certain kind of construction shoe, like a boot type of thing.
Yeah.
Nevada shoe factory footprints accompanied Blythe Harrington's footprints. You see these, we know where the shoes came from. Very specific, okay? From there, from the Antelope Valley Road to her death scene 200 yards into the sagebrush. They said that the Nevada Shoe Company or Nevada Shoe Factory reports no record of ever having done business with Edward Crockett. Never bought anything with them, and he didn't have any of them in his house. Testimony from state's witnesses who saw Crockett ride in and out of Lemon Valley on the day of the murder also said they saw no rifle. They also suppressed. They didn't call those people. All the people who said he had no rifle. The prosecutor also, because they knew all this, didn't want to take the case to trial, and the judge said, you have to.
Oh, my God.
So the diary is admitted as evidence of his motive to kill his stepdaughter. The trial continues because think of the evidence. We're finding this out now. That's not when the defense found it out. Defense doesn't find it out till after the trial. All of this shit. Okay, that's all the shit that's missing from the trial. So they said that also they want to get the diary out because it's inadmissible hearsay. It denies Crockett's constitutional right to confront witnesses against him.
Right.
From the dead is an exception they make, though, because it's not like she's like hiding in a motel room somewhere. Mm-hmm. Inadmissible as uncorroborated accusations of uncharged and unproven criminal conduct, even though he admitted to it, statutory rape, and inadmissible because its prejudicial impact would greatly outweigh its probative value. So June Campbell comes out, the one who saw the girls riding from her house. She testified she observed a girl resembling Blythe Harrington riding a dark colored horse slowly, like we said. Okay. However, of course, later on, she also testified that approximately 30 minutes later, she observed a man resembling Crockett riding the easement road behind her residence much faster in the same direction. There, of course, they don't get the girl who said I had my friend out there and all that. She does. They don't call her to testify and the defense doesn't know she exists. So during the trial, this is the worst. The defense discovered that unreported blood grouping tests had been performed by the sheriff's criminologist lab assistant.
Yeah.
This is before CSI, forensic files. This is before your average everyday person who might be on a jury knows dick about any of this investigator. They know that you sit a guy down, you put a bright light on him, and you yell at him till he admits it. That's it.
Where were you on the night of? Right.
That's it. Nowhere. You're going down. So they... Wow. Okay. The assistant admitted she had tested the vaginal swab taken from the body of Blythe, but had not reported the results because she considered them to be, quote, strange or, not what she thought was going to happen.
Not the ones I wanted.
The results showing a positive reaction for both A and B type secretions were hardly inexplicable here, though they're not. They are a true B secretion would simply eliminate Crockett as her lone killer since the blood his blood type is ARH positive and the victim is also A. So if there's a fucking B, there's somebody else. And if there's an A and B, it might have been two people.
Right.
The lab assistant indicated she thought perhaps it was a false B reaction caused by bacterial action.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
A forensic serologist testified that bacterial action can cause false B reaction, but if intact sperm were found, the bacterial level would be low, and it's highly unlikely that would happen. Mm. He also testified that a sperm slide could be examined for the amount of bacteria present and could easily be preserved. The lab assistant testified she had examined a sample of the swab of the sperm at the time she made the unreported blood grouping tests and had found sperm with tail, so should have been fine. Yeah. Still, no one asked her to preserve the slide, and she threw it away. She threw it the fuck away, Jimmy. She threw it away.
Murder trial. We're throwing it away.
The swab itself could no longer be tested because it also had not been properly preserved. She just threw it somewhere. It didn't, like, wrap it up and do all the whatever the fuck
you have
to do.
Put it in her pocket.
I don't know. I don't have that job. It's not my job to know. In closing, the closing argument, the prosecutor commented several times to the jury on Mrs. Crockett, Chickalotta, her failure to testify. They're not allowed to pick on if he doesn't testify. You're not allowed to make comments about someone pleading the fifth on that if they're in their own trial. You are, though, however, apparently allowed to say she didn't testify, which means, what do you think that means? She thinks he did it. So the defense, following the defense counsel's final argument to the jury, the court clerk then, because there was a rebuttal, a re-closing rebuttal from the prosecutor, the court clerk said to the prosecutor, quote, "Go get him, Tiger."
Oh, my God.
Okay. The verdict comes in.
Yeah, this is so ugly.
Okay. Several hours of deliberation here. It's around midnight, and the verdict comes in that they cannot reach a verdict.
Good.
The court inquired how they stood. They heard it was 11-1 at this point. So the judge says, get your asses back in there and figure this out. We're not going to fucking, it's been a 5 week. They said it's been a 5 week trial, and he tells the jury if a mistrial is declared, it'd have to be tried all over again by some other jury. So try real hard, which judges say that all the time.
Yeah.
Keep trying. So shortly after they began deliberating again, in like no time, they came back with a fucking, they came back with a verdict. Done.
Boy. Oh boy.
So they come in and they find him guilty of murder in the second degree. It's a compromise they made.
Okay. Yeah.
We're not positive, so we'll do that. Yes, so he is sentenced to, you, sir, may fuck off, life in prison.
Yeah.
Here. He appeals. This is about, it happened in 74, the appeals in 79.
Okay, so 3 years after the trial.
After the trial. They said, The circumstantial evidence in the case is sufficient to sustain a conviction, they say, in the trial. But, however, in effect, the unreported blood grouping test indicating a B reaction was direct exculpatory evidence, indicating, as it did, that someone other than Crockett had raped and killed Blythe Harrington. This test, by itself, a prima facie showing exonerating him. That's what the appeals court says. Of course, the prosecution attempting to explain away the B reaction by relying on the state's own mishandling of the swab to argue that the reaction was caused by bacteria. Hey, we fucked it up. So
clearly it was bacteria.
Clearly it was bacteria. You think we keep the shit clean back here? Hell no. It's a fucking, look, it's a mess back here. I got
so much bacteria in here.
I got like a chicken parmesan sandwich from 3 days ago sitting there. That's got to have some bacteria on it.
I just sneezed on several slides.
Oh, it was a lot. Had the test results been reported when made as required by the discovery order, as well as by prosecutor's instructions to the lab assistant, then the sperm swab and sperm slide could have been preserved and reexamined to resolve any issue concerning validity of these apparently exculpatory initial results. Unfortunately, the scientific verification is forever foreclosed because the government admittedly did not properly preserve the swab. Jesus. Further, the sperm slide, which easily could have been preserved, was intentionally, though not maliciously, discarded. The state now seeks to benefit from its own faulty procedures by urging the factual possibilities which proper procedures may well have foreclosed. So they're like, if we did do it right, it would have come out right. We're fine.
Right.
They said, we think this approach is legally untenable. We cannot permit speculative inferences adverse to Crockett to be derived from the absence of evidence, which the state should have preserved. Were we to do so, it's clear Crockett would be prejudiced by this loss and our holdings would be offended. So they said it's obviously not a case where an otherwise prejudicial loss may be ignored on the ground that the evidence is overwhelming. The evidence of guilt is overwhelming. They said it was a close case. They needed this physical evidence could have done it. So they said due process cannot be restored in this case by retrial since the swab is gone and there's no way fairly to eliminate the prejudice that this has caused.
Solid argument.
We therefore reverse the conviction and order the indictment against Crockett be dismissed.
Wow.
You're not even allowed to try him again on this, they said. You fucked it up too bad. So there is a dissenting opinion on this, by the way. There's a dissenting opinion on this. One judge that says this should be fine. Says the victim had recently experienced consensual intercourse and the lack of evidence of a struggle is indicative that the victim was familiar with the killer. Who knows if she had a boy? What are you talking about?
If there's two guys there, you're going to be fucking, you're not going to struggle.
The court, we don't know if they had a gun to her head. Who fucking knows? The court has heretofore recognized, however, that women can be and often are raped through fear rather than actual force. Once rape is accomplished, whether through force or fear, the assailant not infrequently proceeds to kill the victim. The dissent also mentions that the decedent was killed with a .22 caliber firearm and proceeds to notice that the appellant owned a .22 caliber rifle and was carrying a .22 caliber pistol on the day of the tragedy. This is true. Expert testimony, however, showed that the appellant's pistol could not have been the death weapon. Furthermore, according to the record, others and not appellant were in possession of this .22 rifle that day. They go through all this and basically said, it could have been him. I don't know about a dismissal, but it is fucking dismissed. And, they sell her trailer, I see, later on, and then their trailer that they had. Right, right. And then I found him. He is still alive.
Wow.
82 years old, living in Mina, Nevada. That's where he is. So apparently shaky on if he's a murderer or not. We don't know that, but certainly a molester from back in the day. So
absolutely a grooming child rapist.
He's 82 now. I'm sure he's probably slowed down a bit now, but you know, either way, fucking pretty disgusting overall. So never been solved. Her crime goes completely unpunished now.
That is awful.
I have a theory on this that's weird because doing a lot of newspaper research on this thing, I found in the area and in other areas nearby, there were several other teenage girls found in areas of sagebrush sexually assaulted and shot in a similar fashion. Wow. And a guy is in jail for those, but they didn't tie others to him. And I found many other girls around the state that he wasn't tried for. So I don't know what's going on. I don't know if they'd ruled him out or this is shoddy, shitty police work. I don't know if they just said, fuck it, who cares? And didn't like look around the state for similar crimes. I don't know. But
in the 70s in that area, so easy to be a serial killer.
Yeah. Someone who's not a comedian needs to look into this, basically. Yeah. Someone who actually has investigative skills or something like that. We're comedians. I don't know anything about
that
shit.
That
I'm not good
have,
at this.
Done
We're not
a very
good at
great
much.
Job at preserving that.
Something. So either way, there you go. That is Lemon Valley, Nevada, and a goddamn crazy case. We feel terrible for Blythe Harrington unjustified and obviously, and no justice served. And
poor thing.
Poor thing, man. That is just awful what happened to her. And if you like the show, though, let the world know. Get on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you're listening on. Give us 5 stars. It helps a lot. Head over to shutupandgivememurder.com. We have October 27th virtual live show available for a whole week after that. Watch it once, watch it twice, watch it 100 times. Halloween spectacular, a live show, but right in your living room. Get there. Follow us on social media at Murder Small on Twitter, at Small Town Pod on Facebook, at Small Town Murder on Instagram, patreon.com/crimeandsports. Anybody $5 or above, you get access to everything we do, bonus. Entire back catalog, two new episodes every other week. This week, what you're going to get, Danbury Trashers for Crime and Sports. Mafioso owns a minor league hockey team. Craziness ensues. And then for Small Town Murders bonus, we're going to talk about Haman Lee's case and Adnan Syed and who we think did it. And through massive amounts of research, I definitely have a theory, an absolute theory, and I think you do too. So let's talk about that. We'll talk about that case. That is patreon.com/crimeandsports is where you get all of that shit. And you'll get a shout out at the end of the regular shows as well. Do all of that. Keep hanging out with us. Want to follow us on social media? Head to shutupandgivememurder.com. The links are there. You can find us. Do that. Keep coming back week after week. And until next week, everybody, train pulling into the station. We will see you next week.
Bye.
Hey Prime members, you can listen to Small Town Murder early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
In May of 1980, near Anaheim, California, Dorothy Jane Scott noticed her friend had an inflamed red wound on his arm and seemed unwell. She insisted on driving him to the local hospital to get treatment. While he waited for his prescription, Dorothy went to grab her car to pick him up at the exit, but would never be seen alive again, leaving us to wonder, decades later, what really happened to Dorothy Jane Scott. From Wondery, Generation Y is a podcast that covers notable true crime cases like this one and many more. Every week, hosts Aaron and Justin sit down to discuss a new case, covering every angle and theory, walking through the forensic evidence and interviewing those close to the case to try to discover what happened. And with over 450 episodes, there's a case for every true crime listener. Follow the Generation Y podcast on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.